Yeah, are we on? Okay, I see a little face. Your face. All right, well here we are then.
Yeah, this is Welcome to Casual and Informal Riddles in the Dark episode, as we're trying to get ourselves sorted out here. This is, today we have, welcome, I'm Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, and we are here doing, attempting a never-before-attempted thing, which is a live panel discussion with as many of our Riddles in the Dark analysts as we could get. So we have people from several different continents all gathered here live together today. So I'm going to let Dave give you a little preview here, a little introduction to everybody.
Yes. All right. So welcome to this very special Hobbit Day edition of Riddles in the Dark. And, you know, we want to just start by wishing everyone a happy Hobbit Day and wishing happy birthday to Bilbo and Frodo. This is such an exciting day, and we're really excited to be a part of this special all-day broadcast that Middle Earth Network is doing. Thank you very much, guys. If you are somehow listening to this but you're not on the page, go to hobbitday.com and you can join in the fun. It's well, obviously we're the most exciting part of it, but there's lots of other things going on too. So so you want to go join in there. So for Riddles in the Dark, we are doing a really special thing today. In addition to the usual suspects, me, Dave Kahle, and also Professor Olson. How's it going, Corey? And then our sort of our taskmaster, Trish Lambert. Hi, Trish. We're also joined by a number of our panelists who are participating in our prediction game, and we're going to just have a nice roundtable discussion about The Hobbit and the Hobbit film. And I think we're actually going to, unsurprisingly, focus a lot of our attention on the biggest development this week, which is the trailer. So let me introduce who is here with us. And if for some reason I happen to leave somebody out, please punish me and let me know. But I want to start by introducing Merrick from A Casual Stroll to Mordor. Merrick, how's it going, man?
It's going very well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, dude. So Casual Stroll to Mordor is the largest Lord of the Rings online website, blog, podcast. So we're really excited to have him here. We also have Arwen from Middle Earth News and also from the Warriors of the Westfold podcast. Arwen, how are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Yes, and it's wonderful to hear the sound of your lovely voice. It's been a while since we talk.
I know.
Yep. Next, I want to introduce Hannah Harlow from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. She has been sort of the steward that has ushered Corey through the whole book publication process. And, of course, that's one of the big announcements and developments for this week. Corey's book is finally out. So welcome, Hannah. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, we're really excited to have you, and I'm excited to finally have a chance to actually talk to you. So, next, I want to introduce Megan Engel from The Last Alliance, the University of Alberta Tolkien Society. We weren't sure whether you were going to make it, and we're really glad that you've managed to join us. And it sounds like you also have some compatriots with you too. So please, Megan, welcome, and tell me who else we've got with us.
Yes, thank you so much, Dave. I have my Vice President, Mitch Liddell, here.
Hello.
As well as our faculty advisor, Rick Van Manen. And we are all very excited because we just noticed that in the back of Corey's room, he has the exact same map that's hanging on the wall in the office we're in right now. So that's awesome.
Wow, nerds. And no, I'm just kidding, because I have that map as well. not in this room right now, but I do have it. And then, unless I'm much mistaken, my final panelist that I need to introduce is Emil Johansson, who is the proprietor of the super awesome website Lord of the Rings Project, or LOTR Project. The website is lotrproject.com. And I definitely suggest you guys, oh, and of course, Sean Gunner. Yes, thank you, Sean. See, I'm glad you reminded me. Welcome, Emil.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for the introduction. I'm so glad to be here.
Sure thing. Okay, and last but not least.
Emil is joining us from Sweden, right?
Oh, yes, Sweden.
Yes, Yeah, our last two guests are really dedicated. They're joining us from across the pond and in like vastly different time zones, giving up their evenings to join us. So okay, finally, Sean Gunner from the Tolkien Society. He's joining us from the UK, right, Sean?
That's right. Yes, I'm coming live from the Tolkien Society's Oxenmoot event in Oxford. We're having a great.
I was going to say, you're fresh from the Oxenmoot, right, Sean?
Whoa, I'm not really fresh. I'm in the middle of it.
Doesn't get fresher than that, I guess.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, it's still ripening, in fact.
Yes. Once I finish this, we're going off to have the costume masquerade and experience a bit of singing and some poetry, so it should be good fun.
Excellent.
Wow. Are you wearing a costume?
Sadly not. I say sadly with a big hint of sarcasm. I'm not one for costumes, I have to admit.
Well, Sean, I have to say that is probably sad for everyone else, though. I'm sure they would all be in costume. You know, you can get the big Bjorn costume out or something. I mean, you know, a bear suit wouldn't be that much to ask, would it?
I tell you what, Corey, when you dress up, I'll do the same.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay. On that note, so just brief ground rules. We're going to run this like a panel. So we're going to kind of pose a question and then run down the panel. We're not going to completely discourage you from jumping in, talking over each other. We want it to be as natural as possible. So for example, we kind of eschewed trying to force you to use the little hand-raising functionality in GoToMeeting because we don't want it to be that artificial. Just, you know, be as polite as possible, but also natural. And it's going to be chaotic because we've got, like, a crap load of people on here, but I think it's going to be super fun.
That was real scientific.
Yep. So, the first thing we would like to do is just pose the question: what did you guys think of the new trailer? And maybe give us one thing that really jumped out about it to you. And let's start with Arwen.
Ooh, I'm first. I feel nervous now. No, I actually really loved it. The first thing that really popped out to me was it felt very light and funny, kind of reminded me of the book, not dark like Lord of the Rings. So I was really happy to see those characteristics in the trailer. And just, you know, just a lot of kind of silly stuff centered around Bilbo and about how uncomfortable he is at the fact that he has to do all this stuff. And so I really enjoyed it. I had an overall, I was very, very excited about it.
Awesome. How about next, let's hear from Emil.
Oh, yes. Well, I enjoyed the trailer as well, a lot, actually. But there were a few things that jumped out to me, and especially the trolls, which I had been thinking about recently, and the fact that there was no purse and they didn't have clothes.
Yes, yeah, I was thinking of the same thing too when people were, because people were asking about the purse afterwards, and I kept telling them what I've been telling them for months: give up on the purse, it's not going to happen. But yeah, that seemed fairly clear, because the fact that they don't even have pockets to pick, it's looking bleak on the purse front, I gotta tell you. So I think my dire predictions about the total lack of talking purse seem to be being borne out there in that trailer.
Yes, and I noticed you were tweeting extensively about the trolls this week, Emil.
Yes, definitely, and because I kind of had been wondering about it for quite some time, but right. I was generally very relieved when I saw the trailer, because it has, as previously mentioned, this humorous undertone, which is similar to the book.
Yeah. Yep. So, how about you, Hannah?
I also really like the trailer. And this isn't really anything new, but my favorite part was seeing Gollum. So I really loved in Lord of the Rings how they handled Gollum's, you know, dual personalities, and I thought seeing him in the trailer just made me really happy. I love the way they handled him.
Yeah. Are you in the camp of people that think he seemed somehow, like, cuter, more benign?
He seemed a little perkier, you know. They give him a little bit of innocence, I think, to make him a more sympathetic character. And, you know, you have that in, like, the big eyes, and you know, he has a little cuteness, I guess. I guess I'd put myself in that camp.
Corey, are you schooling your face? I mean, I saw an eyebrow kind of rise slightly.
No, I was thinking, you know, I definitely thought he was cuter. What I can't decide is how much of that is just familiarity. I mean, my first reaction when I saw the two towers was not, oh, he's so adorable. And maybe now, because I am familiar with him from the films, and so seeing the same character again in a different context, you know, maybe, you know, like, I overlook the ways in which he is still fairly funny looking. But I did think he was, like, my primary reaction to Gollum in the trailer was he is just adorable. I mean, he just looks cuddly. I mean, you know, he has this, you know, these sweet blue eyes, and his complexion looks smoother too, I thought. I mean, it just, and again, some of that is going to be, you know, CG enhancements, you know, over the last 10 years, no doubt. But, you know, the fact that they're enhancements doesn't explain it. It's still a conscious choice. I mean, they could be using the CG enhancements, you know, to make him rougher and scragglier and more funny looking, but they don't seem to be going in that direction. So yeah, the increased cuteness of Gollum, I thought, was potentially an issue. I mean, that seemed to sort of suggest that. I mean, if that really is a conscious choice, which it looked like to me, that seems to answer the question or suggest an answer to the question about the direction they're going to be pushing Gollum's character in this film.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm not skeptical is probably not the word, but I'm holding out. And actually, Daniel Helen in the chat room just mentioned this. Let's remember that at this point, when he's talking, and he can afford to be adorable, because first of all, he's going to win either way in his mind. He knows he's got the ring stashed, right? So whether he wins the riddle game or not, he's going to eat the Hobbit whole. So he can be adorable and cute, and because he, you know, knows. I am waiting to see what happens when he finds his ring is gone. I think he's going to turn pretty nasty.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like the whole situation was made a little bit lighter. I mean, at the end of that scene, it ends with a joke. I mean, it ends with, you know, it doesn't end with this, oh, I'm really afraid that this creature is going to eat me or that I'm in mortal peril. You know, Bilbo just goes, yeah, okay. I mean, and that's a classic. It's a classic just return to comedy. So I agree. It seems to be lighter, and I think, and I agree. I have the same impression, is that here's Gollum. He's not the twisted hatred, you know, he's not being, he's not being stinker, he's not being any, he's being a character, it's almost like R2-D2-ish, where they brought him back just to, you know, I mean, he's in the story, so they had to bring him back, but they didn't make him this character that was fearsome or loathsome, they just made him this character that's there almost for comic reliefs, in my opinion. So, he was definitely not the menacing. I was a little disappointed that he wasn't this menacing creature I even think it would have been made more dynamic if he was, because that would just, you know, this is the start of his evolution, but I kind of think that the movie made it, this is, remember, this guy is lovable, you kind of care for him, and, you know, sure, he's a little bit bad, but he's also funny.
I think that's a really good point, because in the book, at least, Gollum is always very scary and menacing, and it's the moment when Bilbo should kill him and he doesn't that is really a transformative moment for Bilbo. And if he's already cute and kind of lovable beforehand, it really takes away from that.
Yeah, I think it's a really big deal, because, I mean, it's if you take the whole thing that is the, you know, the whole Gollum career from the beginning of the Riddles in the Dark, you know, through the cracks of Doom, it really is later on that that he is you know, we see the changes, we see the shifts, and you're right. He is primarily just an antagonist, and it's one of the things that makes it such a big deal that Bilbo does choose to have pity on him. He has lots of reasons not to. His reasons to just, like, kill this strange, dark, slimy, monstrous creature in front of him far outweigh his reasons to take pity on him. The kind of empathy that he shows for Gollum is a real leap, which of course is then physicalized in his leap over Gollum. But I mean, it's kind of out of, well, not exactly out of left field, but it's a huge jump. Whereas by the time, you know, Frodo's relationship with Gollum and even Sam's is very different, because they see him and they see him being pitiable. They see how miserable he is, how tortured he is. Leading up, of course, to that wonderful and horrible moment on the stairs of Cirith Ungol, when, you know, he is almost turning back, and then, you know, tragically ruined by Sam waking up cranky. So, I agree that, but see, that's the tricky thing. Since they have the Lord of the Rings stuff already, they do seem to be kind of importing this stuff, you know, wanting us to be thinking about Gollum like we were thinking about him, you know, halfway through the Two Towers film, for instance, or, you know, and that's tough. I mean, I think, you know, having him be cute and cuddly at the beginning to make Gollum, I mean, imagine it, they could seriously make Bilbo's decision look almost the other way, like having pity is the no-brainer, and killing him would be monstrous, whereas it's really the opposite in the book.
It seems like if you're right, Corey, and what they're trying to do is kind of take advantage of the fact that people have already seen the Lord of the Rings films, it seems like probably the most effective strategy there would be to have the character as he is initially portrayed sort of betray our expectations. And our expectations would be that he's evil and that he's treacherous and that he's not trustworthy, because that's ultimately what the character that we saw in the Lord of the Rings films. So it seems like if they wanted to kind of try and introduce some uncertainty and some suspense, then maybe the way to do that is to have him seem benign initially, and that there's a turn maybe right around the time he discovers his ring's missing or something. So. Anyway, let's keep going down. I'm really excited that we sparked some back and forth conversation there, and it went really smoothly despite how many people
that's
we
good.
Have on here. So, let's keep it up, but let's keep going down the panel so everybody has a chance to give us their one thing. Next, let's hear from Merrick from Casual Stroll.
I'm sorry, I may have had audio issues when you talked about the one thing. What is the one thing that you'd like?
Basically, just anything about the trailer that jumped out at you. Was there, you know, like your general thoughts, but also like, was there one specific scene or character or something like that that really kind of struck you?
Yeah, the brief thing that we saw of Radagast the Brown really kind of struck out at me. I couldn't help but think that, I mean, it's not like I know the guy, but that didn't look like Radagast the Brown to me. And It also kind of, it's like this, hello, we're walking into, and I'm trying to remember how you, Dr. Olsen, how you kind of mentioned this before, was how Peter, this is an interpretation of Tolkien's world, and, especially with the Lord of the Rings when you referred to that. And this is, you know, it is an interpretation, but to me it was just like, here's a brief thing of Radagast the Brown, and I just couldn't, it just kind of made me go, oh, inside. I mean, don't get me wrong, the trailer left me going, this is going to be a great movie. I can't wait to see it. But at the same time, seeing Radagast, and in the brief moment I saw him, he kind of looked cartoonish. He kind of looked, you know, had this bulbous nose. And I just kind of rolled my eyes thinking, you know, I hope that this is not a scene that I hope that I'm sitting there going, wow, I can't wait for this to move on so we can get to The Hobbit again.
So we can get to The Hobbit again. Yeah, that is going to be a challenge, I think. Because, I mean, you know, I've said lots of times, I think there's lots of justification for them to be, you know, bringing in these, you know, this this outside stuff, it makes perfect sense. But you're right that a serious challenge on their part is going to be, like, how much of the scene's going to be showing? You know, how much are we going to be really conscious of, you know, and now we move away from the book and now we're back in the book again. How well integrated are they going to really be able to make those? Is that going to feel organic? I think that there's a real question of that.
Well, and we'll have, you know, hedgehog acupressure, so that'll be interesting.
It was really cute with the hedgehog, though. I mean,
it was.
That was twice as cute as Gollum, even.
That's, I mean,
the hedgehog, man. Yeah. Though I still hope that we see that hedgehog later at the Battle of Dol Guldur. I still hold to that. I think I want to see that. I want to see now. I want to see that particular hedgehog.
Playing
some kind of crucial role in, you know, defeating some orc captain or something. I now feel emotionally attached to that hedgehog, and I want to see it make good in the movie. So that's.
Okay, so how about our Last Alliance folks? What do you guys, what jumped out at you guys about the trailer?
Okay, well, I'll go first. I actually really liked the score that I heard because it was completely original from what I could tell. At the end of the first trailer, I believe they end with the theme of the ring from the Lord of the Rings trilogy, so they reuse that theme at the end of the first trailer, which is okay, but I was hoping for some new thematic material, and in this trailer, it seemed like there was completely new thematic material in the score, and it was epic, and it was sweeping, and it was melodically beautiful, so I was really pleased with that, and I'm really excited to see what else is in store for us in terms of the music. So I will turn it over to Mitch now to see what he liked.
So I know there are three of us, so it'll be fast, but one thing I was so surprised to see, and I exclaimed when I saw them, was the stone giants when they were going through the passes. I thought they were just rocks falling, and it kind of looked kind of like a humanoid form, and I was blown away. It was awesome. I didn't really expect to see them.
Yeah. And so Rick will tell us also what he liked.
Well, I did like the Gollum scene, although all your points about Gollum and were right on. One thing that concerned me was Galadriel's asking Gandalf why he chose Bilbo, and Gandalf's answer that Bilbo gives him courage. That seems like a bit of a departure to me, as I recall from the book. So
yes. You see the whites of my eyes on that one. Absolutely. Yeah. 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 That was my number one thing, actually, was that line by Gandalf. I found really striking. And you know, it's not that I find it totally inappropriate, but it's remarkable. I mean, it certainly is remarkable that, you know, Gandalf says that I'm not even sure what he means by it, that it gives him courage. I mean, the fact that Gandalf is going to be, you know, in doubt and sort of tormented, well, I mean, we could have guessed that. They made him tormented even in The Lord of the Rings. So certainly, I mean, you know, if there was one thing that was consistent, you know, in Peter Jackson's decisions in The Lord of the Rings about what he did with characters, it was to make them more uncertain. Torment. Yes, torment was the primary theme. But no, yeah, that, you know, that they were all divine, you know, Aragorn and even Gandalf and everybody, you know, they're doubting themselves and everything else. So, you know, there's no shock at all to seeing the you know, that Gandalf would kind of go in that direction. But I did find it very striking that he would say that about what it implies, and I'm not even quite sure yet fully what it does imply, but sort of the vistas that it opens out onto Gandalf's understanding of his relationship with Bilbo was really interesting.
I personally, my thing about that scene is I'm really, really tired of Peter Jackson's condescending elves, man. Like, we were treated to three movies of that with Lord of the Rings, of Elrond being condescending toward Aragorn and men in general, and now we're getting Galadriel being condescending toward Bilbo. I don't know what is the deal with the condescending elves.
See, it's an issue because it's one of the things that theoretically you would want to establish is how high the elves are, right? I mean, you want them to be perceived as greater than humans in some ways. And certainly it is one option to make them looking down on people. So that emphasizes that they're higher, or at least that they think they are, but certainly there are downsides to that particular move. And I agree, certainly Elrond at least had, he had kind of the corner of the on the market on the elven grumpiness thing in the Lord of the Rings films. I mean, he was really the icon of that kind of, you know, not exactly stuck up, but certainly grumpy. Elves, if Galadriel's going to go that way too, and I'm not quite sure, by the way, that I necessarily agree with that. I didn't read her question as, I didn't really hear that as fully condescending, curious, I guess. I mean, certainly in the way that she alluded to him, to Bilbo, was a little bit condescending, but I didn't see it nearly as much as with Elrond.
But it is a confusing choice. It's not something that even Gandalf fully understands why he could choose him. So it's not. I think it's certainly worth a question on Galadriel's part.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's why that didn't. That's why her question, I think, didn't really jump out at me for that reason, because it is a very natural question. And you can see, even with the kind of relationship that they seem to be suggesting, brace yourself, Trish, the kind of relationship that they seem to be suggesting between Gandalf and Galadriel, that clearly Galadriel is the one who seems to be Gandalf's closest confidant. I mean, if there's anybody who's really in Gandalf's confidence and that he can be open with, it would appear to be Galadriel. So it wouldn't be shocking, from what we've seen, to see the two of them have that. So anyway, what the heck were you thinking about this halfling guy? And have Gandalf give, you know, an honest answer that he doesn't give to anybody else, or maybe even fully understand himself. In the books, actually, that's Elrond who's in that role. I mean, we see several, especially I'm thinking here of the, not in The Hobbit itself, I mean, we do see them interacting in The Hobbit, but I'm thinking in particular of the conversations that we get between Elrond and Gandalf in Of the Rings of Power in the Third Age at the end of the Silmarillion, for instance. It's Elrond that we see Gandalf, you know, when he goes and discovers that the Necromancer is really Sauron. It's to Elrond, not to Galadriel, that we get that scene of him coming back and saying to Elrond, yeah, it's him all right. And the two of them sort of sharing their fears and talking about their speculations and things. Elrond and Gandalf seem to have a much more formal and much more stiff relationship, certainly in the Lord of the Rings films. And the implication seems to be, based on what we've seen, that extends there. So that more personal, friendly relationship seems to be between Gandalf and Galadriel, which makes sense, but that does seem to be a bit of a departure in that way.
Well, and I guess, you know, if we just think about The Hobbit itself, Gandalf's answer should have probably been something like, because the dragon won't be able to smell him. Right. I mean, that's really the role that Bilbo's playing, as this burglar in The Hobbit. So, I mean, even Galadriel's question is a little odd. I mean, the question about Frodo being the ring bearer in Lord of the Rings makes sense, but why would she be so concerned about Bilbo with the dragon, although there may be some element of the story that Jax is developing we don't know about yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I would follow that up with again, though, is, again, I would emphasize sort of the personal nature of that. I mean, Gandalf could have answered strategically, and I'm assuming, no, I'm not assuming, we got already some of that in the trailer. That is, the strategizing that we see Gandalf doing overtly in The Quest of Erebor, you know, where he's thinking, okay, hobbits can move really silently, so if we're sneaking in a secret door, a hobbit would actually be a real asset. Okay, so we'll start with that. And then it's the smell thing, right? Not that he won't be smellable, but that Smaug isn't going to recognize the smell. He knows dwarf smell, of course, but he's not necessarily going to be tipped off as to what's happening if he smells Hobbit, because he won't have smelled it before. And that, of course, is something, you know, that's in the book, in the original book, of course, where Smaug is curious about the Hobbit smell and having never smelled it before. But again, I think it's important. I feel like what we're being shown in the trailer there, and the choice to put that little snippet into the trailer, we see Gandalf revealing to the dwarves the strategy to it, you know, that the hobbits can move silently is the line that we get there, right? But with Galadriel, the question is not, you know, and the question that she seems to be asking seems to be not, is there a reason why you would choose to take a hobbit? Do you have something in mind when you have chosen a hobbit? But rather, why this hobbit? Why this guy? Why have you chosen him? And that seems to be that sort of more personal question, why Bilbo in particular, and what seems to be kind of behind that, you know, what is your relationship with Bilbo? Why does Bilbo matter to you seems to be what the question that Gandalf is answering there. And that's the part of it that most interested me about Gandalf's response. That's where I feel we get, if not crystal clear insight, that's what at least stimulated my own curiosity to be thinking about how they're going to be handling the Bilbo-Gandalf relationship, which seems to be, you know, fairly tender, sort of slightly paternal, but again, that's interesting in Gandalf's expressing the kind of weakness that he does, you know, in saying that he's afraid in that context. So I it's why I thought it was really, really curious, really interesting.
Well, I found the characterization of Gandalf in the trailers rather interesting, because you have in The Hobbit, after he has his first encounter with Bilbo and he scratches the thing on the door, Bilbo shuts the door, and then you have this image of Gandalf kind of standing there laughing for a moment. And it's not until you get to the Fellowship of the Ring that you get this sense of Gandalf carrying a burden and feeling old. And I find the trailer, you don't see Gandalf as the kind of guy who's going to be laughing at anything. So, you know, they seem to have really portrayed him as very somber and serious, and I'm going to miss that part of Gandalf, I think, unless maybe there's going to be some of that in there in the unexpected party.
Yeah, yeah. No, there probably will, but yeah, I mean, it will be interesting to see what they emphasize and if they make some general trends. That is, if Gandalf in general in this movie is going to tend to be different, you know, if we're going to see some kind of global shift in Gandalf's character because of the different context and the different time frame of the film, they could do that. I'll be interested to see if they do.
Man, I would love to keep to push the conversation along, but I can't resist commenting. one thing that's kind of interesting about this conversation is one of the big themes of The Lord of the Rings, especially coming out of Elrond's comments at his council, the Council of His Name, is this idea that sometimes great deeds are done by the hands of the small because the eyes of the great are elsewhere. And I wonder if these sort of on-screen portrayals of the elves, you know, Elrond, Galadriel, as being sort of questioning, why would you choose this guy? Why are you doing this? That kind of stuff is kind of a reasonable film adaptation of this idea that you know, Gandalf picks Bilbo to complete this quest, and Galadriel and Elrond just don't get it and don't understand why any of that, you know, why would you pick this guy? And this is sort of getting at this idea that them being the great, they're sort of sitting so high and so lofty that they can't see, they're kind of missing the trees for the forest, as it were. They don't see the small details, the kind of the flows of the music of Arda, you might say, that might be that Gandalf might sort of be tuned into that suggests that Bilbo is the right guy for this job. And Gandalf occupies this weird place in the middle where he is one of the great, but he's plugged in, right? Like, he's not the guy. He's actually almost always looking exactly where he needs to be looking to get things moving. And you know, despite being kind of one of the lofty characters, I guess. So, and yes, Sean, we are going to add you in. I was saving you for last, Sean, because I know you're going to have something awesome.
Well, Corey, thanks for that. One of the things.
Actually, why don't you comment on this and then give us your one? Give us your one thing.
What I was going to say about the trailer is, aside from the fact we've clearly got sexual tension between Gandalf and Galadriel, and the fact that Radagast is abusing small animals, and that Gollum is now moisturising, one of the things that I noticed most about the trailer was the things that we're still not seeing. We still haven't seen eagles at all, and I was really hoping to get some eagles, and we still haven't seen a big baddie. You know, there is no big baddie presence in the trailer. You were looking back at some of the Lord of the Rings trailers, that was a similar theme, although I remember with the Two Towers one, you had Saruman quite looming large over them. But I would like to have seen the Great Goblin in the trailer. What I was very pleased to have seen was the stone giants. I was pleasantly surprised to have seen stone giants coming in. I absolutely loved that stone giant. I was delighted. And of course, the teasing shot in the distance of Dol Guldur, which again is hinting at what's going on there. Is it just going to be Gandalf going in there and having a little look around, or is it going to be the White Council doing their Avengers-style attacking of Dol Guldur? That's what's really got me excited about the trailer now. But I'm most concerned about Radagast's animal abuse. I mean, getting small animals to ferry you around is not clever. I mean, I think a lot of animal rights groups will have a thing or two to say about that.
somebody commented on one of my Facebook posts about this. He suggested that in torturing the small animals, that was giving Radagast the power to see the future, because they have that voiceover from him right as he's poking the little hedgehog, where he's talking about some trouble coming, and he was like, "Look, Radagast is using little animals to divine the future."
Yeah, because that's sound logic, isn't it? Torture hedgehog.
It's really capturing the spirit of Tolkien, I think, in its purest form. Well, at least he wasn't reading their entrails, so there's that.
I think we're going to get that in the next trailer.
So, Sean, out of curiosity, do you think there is any significance to the absence of... Significance to the absence of some of those things that you point out, like the eagles, the absence of big baddies, because there's people out there who are suggesting that they've changed the ending to the film, and in particular that they've pushed it up to maybe out of the frying pan into the fire, or that section. So do you think there's maybe significance to some of these things that weren't present in this trailer, or do you think they're just you know, it was just a choice that. Another sort of comment that someone's made is that this seems to be kind of the funny trailer, and so maybe they wouldn't want to put the Necromancer or Smaug or Azog or any of those characters in the funny trailer.
I think I actually don't think there is massive significance to it. I mean, it's difficult to see how Gandalf is and the dwarves are going to get out of 15 birds in you know, 5 fir trees without the eagles. It's difficult to see how they're going to get out of that situation, unless of course Radagast is going to summon more animals and torture them to get them out of fire, as sort of fireman bunnies. I'm not sure. With regards to the Great Goblin, I actually think the kind of the significance there is that they're saving him. The audience is going to be scared during the film with the Great Goblin.
But, yes.
Yeah, I agree with Sean on that.
I'm not convinced.
I thought that was a troll, just to be honest.
It looked like a troll, I thought. Though I couldn't figure, it didn't seem to be made of stone, so I wasn't quite sure what was the situation there.
And who did Trish just step on there, who was commenting?
Oh, that was me. I was just going to say that I think Peter Jackson is really controlling about what he releases, and that's why we're not going to see some of the big bads. And if the eagles are going to be super cool, he's going to save it for the movie.
Yeah, he's very Steve Jobsian.
Though, you know, that's true. Though there, you know, I think it's kind of interesting because the eagles, you would think, would be not a big reveal, right? Because we've seen the eagles. I mean, we got quite a bit of eagles in The Lord of the Rings. And he has released the wargs, right? We got lots of wargs in this trailer, which is clearly corrective, right? Because, you know, he himself has admitted that he didn't like the hyena wargs either from the Lord of the Rings films. And so one could understand why he wants to show off the fact that the wargs actually look good in the Hobbit film. But the eagles, I wasn't thinking much of it because I didn't think there was much mystery about the eagles. You know, we've seen them, and we might get some more of them in some ways, but visually, trailer-wise, I wouldn't have thought there would be much that would be very much different. But of course, by having them not there, now of course he's making me second-guess that. Maybe there's something really cool that he's holding back. I don't know.
No, actually, I forgot we've already seen it. That's okay. I was going to say, I forgot we'd already seen the eagles, so, you know, now maybe they're not worthy of the trailer.
Maybe. Though you'd think he could give them away free, right? Because there's, you know, that wouldn't be a big deal. I don't know. But yeah.
Maybe he thinks we have really short memory.
Yeah, I thought I could hear them.
Right. Yeah, we do see them in the scroll.
I thought I could hear them in the trailer, actually. And that scene where Gandalf's in the tree. I thought just as it moves to the next scene, there's a... I could be mistaken, but I thought there was a slight hint that there was an eagle cry there.
Yeah.
But I'd have to watch it again.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, every
indication... I think I saw eagles. Hmm. I thought I did see eagles in the... right when Gandalf's in the tree.
Yeah.
In the fire. Am I wrong? I thought there were...
No, you're not wrong. I have an image here to prove it. Actually. So.
Dist.
My point... I think the thing is that...
Emil,
we're
seeing
them, they're not being shown off.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Sean.
That we're seeing eagles, but they're not being shown off. We could have had a scene sort of from behind of eagles swooping in over a forest on fire, and we wouldn't be revealing what was going on in the scene, but you'd be getting eagles sort of swooping in as a bit of an action shot. But instead, it just was Gandalf hanging on to a tree on fire, looking a bit pathetic, thinking, oh, well, what have I got myself into here? Where's Radagast with his bunnies when you need him?
I would still like to, by the way, I would still like to protest officially against the animal torture angle on Radagast. There is no evidence whatsoever that he is harming
any
bunnies. It is true that he does seem to have hitched bunnies to his sled, of course, as we knew, though they're perfectly willing for all that we know. But I strongly object to the idea that he's doing anything unseemly to that hedgehog. This is clearly an act of kindness, whatever it is that he's doing. I just thought I would officially register that.
Agreed.
Well, Corey, if I attach bunnies...
Oh, wait, the image.
Oh, I got the image, okay. Sorry, go ahead, Sean.
If I attached bunnies to a sledge and had them ferry me around Oxford, would you consider that okay?
if you did it, Sean, I don't know, that changes things. So by the way, here's the image here.
All right.
Here we go.
So there's, right. I think we can Arwen see. Arwen and Emil, where are the eagles?
Right here, right? Behind him?
Yeah, that's an eagle.
There's an eagle.
That's just smoke.
I was right.
That's just smoke. It's not an eagle.
There is an eagle. I saw it flying.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it's flying. In the trailer, it's flying
beak right
past,
here.
So it's not smoke.
Here we got beak. We've got the wings
I
there.
I am so right. I get extra credit. Oh.
Which part of the trailer is this in?
The main part of the trailer?
The middle part?
<You got it. laughs> I just opened it up. I'm watching it. I'm going to see if this is... Oh, okay, yeah, that's an eagle. You're right.
Yeah. And by the way, we have here the image that I put up here before. Is this is actually breaking news. This is a movie poster which was just released minutes before we started broadcasting. So we can actually have this here to talk about. This is a really interesting choice for a poster. I mean, of course, you know, on the one hand, it's very standard and looks very much like the Lord of the Rings posters. So. You know, trying to establish the connections between the Hobbit film and the Lord of the Rings films, you know, for moviegoers is quite manifest. That by itself might also excuse the prominence of Sting in this picture, because of course those people who have watched the Lord of the Rings films 100 times each will of course recognize that sword as the sword that Elijah Wood was holding in the Lord of the Rings films. But from a thematic standpoint, thinking of The Hobbit and The Hobbit story, it's, to me, quite a remarkable choice to have sword-wielding Bilbo on the poster for this story. I mean, his sword is really important to him, you know, and I've talked about that at various points, how the sword is involved in different stages, you know, at these turning points that Bilbo has in the book. But But to actually show, you know, the stock image of Bilbo being the one with him carrying a sword and looking, you know, kind of like, well, I mean, it's pretty threatening. That's like pretty, you know, pretty intimidating Bilbo. Yeah. This is like the sexy and dangerous Bilbo.
Yeah, it's very like, I don't know, it's almost like very departure from what he looks like in the films, where he's kind of just kind of harried and wistful, and this one he's got this intense stare, and it's also, it's very much, they might have gone this way because just looking right now at the pictures of Elijah Wood, he was more, you know, scared, focused right on the ring, a little bit intimidated, so maybe they wanted to go a different way, but yeah, he looks like he should be on a show on the CW or something.
You see, what I think they've done here is that I think they've realised that they've put out too many shots of Bilbo looking a bit of a simple hobbit, not really wanting to get involved. And they realise they've got to beef up Bilbo's role as the main protagonist in the film. And here they are saying, this is Bilbo, he's a serious guy, he's got this sword, he's not afraid to use it, don't you mess with him, really, despite the fact he's a hobbit. And of course, the other thing that's instantly noticeable about this poster for me is the fact it is, in design, a carbon copy of that Elijah Wood one that was used for the Fellowship of the Ring, where he was, you know, that famous poster with Frodo holding the ring out in front of him. And I think that's clearly reminiscent of that one.
And yeah, completely definitely terrified.
Yes.
Yes. And I think also the background is really interesting. I mean, of course, images like this that they release are so carefully constructed. I mean, every detail. With marketing images like this, I don't think that you can look too carefully at individual details here. The sky in the background I find really fascinating. You get this dark, stormy sky in the foreground with the very clear shafts of sunlight shining down from behind. So this idea of, you know, the light after the storm, you know, hope in a dark world with the light falling on the hills behind that. To be associating those kinds of images with Bilbo in this image is, I mean, it's that, even that background by itself, and especially combined with his, you know, sword wielding dangerous expression posture, says hero to me in a way, exactly, Sean, as you were saying. Frodo's poster said protagonist, but they didn't say hero.
My first reaction to this poster was really more as a movie also 2 or a movie 3 poster. You know, I mean, I see right. This is what Bilbo evolves into. I'm very surprised they're actually putting this out as the movie 1 poster.
Yeah, I agree with you, Trish, because I was on board with the fact that in the trailers, Bilbo was completely unwilling, because he is the unwilling hero, and his transformation is the central pillar of The Hobbit. So to have him in the trailers as unwilling, I was on board with that. And here, I don't like it, because like you said, it's sort of revealing the end of the transformation. It's kind of giving away what Bilbo becomes, which is so crucial. The transformation is so crucial. And I can actually kind of see what Martin Freeman is trying to do here. To me, it seems like he's trying to have this look on his face, like he's unwilling but he's gonna buck up, like he's trying to do that, but he doesn't pull it off. For me, it's just grim and it's out of character and it's too early. It's anachronistic in terms of the progression that we should be at.
Yeah, but you know, think about how, just a thought experiment, imagine they did a poster that's like sort of bumbling Bilbo Baggins kind of standing there looking bewildered and bewothered and whatnot. I have a feeling that's not the kind of poster that would really bring the people in, you know? Like this is clearly them pandering to the audience that's expecting the epic action Lord of the Rings style Hobbit film.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. This is an action film poster. I mean, absolutely it is.
Yep. One thing I'd say coming back on the point about this being a movie 2 or movie 3 poster is, of course, they have another character they're going to want to use a bit more for movie 2 and movie 3, and that's Thorin. They're going to want to push him a lot more for the second and third films, because once we're introduced to him in The Hobbit and we see that he's, you know, he is the leader, he is in charge, they're going to want to push him a bit more when it comes to movie 2 and movie 3, which may also be a reason why they're pushing Bilbo now as kind of a bigger player.
You know,
you guys notice that the sword doesn't have any runes on it?
Yes.
Bandy in the chat pointed that out, and I think he said he found out the translation was Spiderbane or something. What was that? I can't remember. But so he's wondering if, you know, after everything, if those runes.
We're in the Hobbit, in like Hobbit film 3, we're going to get a scene of with Bilbo on his way home, stopping in Rivendell and having his sword engraved, right?
Yeah. Personalize your sting today.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he'll stop by and get a tattoo also, you know, on the way home to commemorate the return journey. Yeah. You know, the other thing I was going to say, this might seem like a strange thing to say because he's the only one in the picture. He looks tall. Yeah. The way that the photo cuts off here, you know, so he, I mean, he goes up out of the frame. If you did not know in advance, you would never guess that the person in this, there's nothing to indicate that the person in this picture is short. So, and again, that seems to be of a piece with the things that we've been noticing, how they're not emphasizing the small and bewithered Bilbo. Instead, they're emphasizing, you know, he looks like swashbuckling Bilbo that we hopefully will get in the with the spiders later on.
Fabio
but,
Bilbo.
Yeah, he does look, I mean, it does, Sean, as you say, look like the Elijah Wood poster, but this also looks like Viggo Mortensen. I mean, it could totally be an Aragorn poster from the first film. So, I mean, I agree we're gonna get Thorin. I mean, goodness, we'll probably get a Kiwi poster for crying out loud. And I'm sure we'll get a Gandalf poster. Though I wonder who's gonna be on the poster of film for, you know, who's gonna be the poster boy of film 3. Will they keep Thorin for
Toriel?
Toriel, yeah, exactly. No.
The hedgehog.
But
the hedgehog. I would be satisfied under those circumstances. Yeah.
Is it just me, or do you guys notice this too? Next to Bilbo's left ear, but the space between the sword and his face, it kind of looks exactly like the brooch that they're all wearing in Lord of the Rings to hold their cloaks.
Yeah, I was looking at that too. It looks like a curl of his hair, yeah. But notice how it reflects exactly the little curly cue on the sword.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a mirror image there, which again, to me seems to emphasize this. You know, like this is not just the sword I happen to be carrying. You know, like this sword was made for me. Like this sword is a reflection of me. I am at one with this sword that I am holding up here next to my face. I mean, this really looks like Bilbo the mercenary, which is odd. I mean, that's a strange effect.
Of course, we have to remember one of the alternate endings to the trailer is Balin telling him that it's actually more of a letter opener.
Right, right, right. Yeah, which is, I guess, I mean, I knew from the beginning that it's too much to ask that Bilbo is going to actually hide the sword in his pants, which is what he does in the book. But yeah, reference to the fact that his sword is not actually a very significant sword is it was a knife. It's supposed to be a knife. It doesn't look like a knife. I mean, it doesn't have the hilt of a knife, really. But yeah, it is actually correct that it's more of a letter opener.
One of the things that Arwen brought up is the thing, whatever it is, that's breaking through the roof of what appears to be Radagast's house. Does everyone everyone remember that scene?
Yeah. Yeah. My first initial thought when I saw that was, weeds have gone crazy. They're attacking. But then another one of my friends.
The bats summoned weeds.
That's what it looked like. It was like, you know, attacking weeds. Like, yeah, roots and, you know, I don't know. I was like, what the heck? So what's going on?
Emil, would you like to give the case for it being a spider?
Oh, well, that's mostly other people. I kind of thought the leg looked a bit wobbly, kind of not spider leg. kind of like, but it, from, it has to be a spider. What else could it be? I mean, it's not.
Well, and yeah, this, of course, picks up like on the great Warner Brothers online Hobbit quiz debate. Of course, you know, the famously non-textual question that they were asking in their textual quiz about the Hobbit was, what attacked Roscoble when nothing ever attacks Roscoble anywhere in Tolkien's writings? And with the correct answer, spiders, I mean, of course, one of the leading interpretations of this is that the person who made the trailer did an accidental spoiler, thinking that it was in the book when it wasn't. So this, I know, for me, this is the main thing that I think has led a lot of people to assume, combined, Emil, with the other thing that you were just saying, like, I mean, he's in Mirkwood. How many other options do we have? It could theoretically be an orc, but an orc probably wouldn't first come through the ceiling, but might come in through the door. You'd think. It's a possibility. So certainly, I mean, it does seem a plausible interpretation of that. But yeah, I don't see much in the way that is sort of physical. I mean, I didn't see it. I mean, I looked at it pretty carefully. If somebody can send us a still of the trailer that gives a pretty airtight spider case. I mean, I rewound that bit like five times to try to see what I could see, and it didn't look very obviously spider-like to me. So I'm certainly okay with the presumptive idea that it's a spider, because it does seem likeliest. But yeah, so while we're fetching this image, Emil just sent me this one, which you saw come up. It is a very amusing contrast between poster Bilbo and and other film Bilbo. That's a radical difference. That is not so impressive a poster.
No, I'm good.
And now I'm sexy. Now I'm not.
Look on his face is certainly better than the one we complained about on the movie scroll. Remember when he's sitting at the head of the table during the next
Oh, party? Yes. Yeah, well, I was actually thinking that, you know, that could have been another option, you know, have him, like, you know, with that, like, big dorky grin that he's got there, which seemed totally inappropriate. But, though, actually, you know, it really raises the question, what expression is more inappropriate? That big grin on Bilbo's face at the head of the feasting table in Bag End in the scroll, or this one on this poster? Both of them seem very un-Bilbo. At the very least, I would suggest, you know, Megan, thinking about what you were saying before, in one way, this seems more appropriate in that at least one can imagine Bilbo looking like this under certain circumstances later in the story, maybe, but certainly at the unexpected party in Bag End, we should not see him sitting around looking smug.
That's another thing. At least in the one of those other alternate endings, we at least get to see Bilbo faint at the unexpected party.
Yes. 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 Yeah.
All right, Corey. There you go, buddy.
Okay. All right. That's the spiderweb picture. Okay. Oops. Didn't happen.
Oh, great. Dang it.
Google Box. Go share it with me.
Whilst we're getting the picture of the spider's leg, I think one of the most interesting things about this is I am convinced it is a spider's leg.
All right. Try it again. Keep going, Sean.
The question for me here is, why are they attacking Radagast? I mean, Radagast lives by spiders all the time, so obviously because he's good and they're evil, they're going to always want to attack him. But why at this particular point, and where in the story is this taking place? Is this taking place in connection with Thorin and company, or is it independent of that? Are Thorin and company coming towards Radagast, or is Radagast helping them in some way and the spiders are trying to prevent that? Or is it Radagast is involved with the Dol Guldur stuff and the spiders are getting involved? Is it just because that they're feeling defensive of their bunny buddies, or is it because they just don't like what Radagast is up to in other matters? What is their motivation here? Does anybody have any idea what that could be?
I actually liked your idea of the Dol Guldur stuff and bringing in the White Council. It makes more sense than, oh, look, there's a bunch of dwarves and hobbits. Let's go get the wizard!
Right. Yeah, like it would just be some kind of, you know, random Mirkwood, you know, like the spiders have been putting up with Radagast for a long time, and they've had it, so they're finally going to come and take him out. You know, it's like
hedgehogs are way too loud at night.
It's like the hedgehog liberation front that's coming in. I don't know, but it certainly seems it would fit better if this were. One of the first moves in the whole Dol Guldur plot, basically. So in this picture now, this thing hanging down is supposed to be the spider's leg?
Yes.
Yes.
There's okay. an appendage sticking through the hole in the roof.
I still say do we see roof. Something in the sunlight there that looks like maybe the top of a spider head or something?
This? Maybe. I mean, this looks like a rat's tail. It doesn't. Well, I don't know.
I'm telling you,
I gotta say that the tree root thing now looks very plausible.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I kind of go with the tree root myself.
I get extra
now.
Credit
I think
again. I rocked this.
There is another possibility here, and that is that Radagast is in the house. And Thorin and company are there as well. Going back to the fact we never saw Bjorn in the trailer, it could be the case that they finish the film in Roscoeville with Radagast and the spiders attacking Radagast and Thorin and company.
So Thorin and company will be brought by the eagles to Roscoeville and then the spiders attack? Or this could perhaps...
Yes, I think that's a great idea.
This could be Thorin and company about to rappel down into Radagast's house from above, having been dropped off by eagles. Yeah. Okay. I could see that. That could work.
I'm a big fan of that theory because it that's what I predicted on that.
Yeah, I knew that too. That's why you were going to be a fan of it. Yeah. No, I'm sticking to the Carrick. Even now, I stick to the. Even if they change the ending, I'm sticking to the Carrick.
No.
Yeah.
So, no. In this theory, is there no separate battle then with the dwarves and the spiders and Bilbo? Like, would that be? It would be a conglomerate of they're at Radagast, and that's the spider battle. Or are there two? Because the thing that I don't like about this, I don't want this to detract. From the spider battle, the central spider battle. I don't want us to see a spider attacking Radagast first, because to me that detracts from this climactic moment where Bilbo frees the dwarf sort of thing. Like, I'm worried about that. So if they join those battles together, okay, maybe, but I don't want to see a hint of this spider leg coming through Radagast's house, and then, because to me that will detract from the later battle.
Here's my question about that, and that is, are they going to make, how are they going to do the spiders? How sentient are the spiders going to be? Are we going to hear spiders converse? Are the spiders going to talk? I kind of doubt that. But in any case, are they going to be intelligent? Shelob was intelligent, and that's going to be the precedent that almost everybody has for giant spiders, is Shelob. Now, we didn't see her acting overtly brainy in the scene in The Lord of the Rings. So, you know, one could, you know, somebody who didn't know the book could easily have watched those films and just thought that she was some, you know, random sort of bestial monster. But basically, what I'm leading up to here is we could get it to, if the spiders are seen as being intelligent, if we can see them actually doing, you know, collaborating and doing intelligent things, then we could conceivably have this as like stage one. And later on, when the spiders catch them, it's like the spiders strike back in film two. And then, you know, so then that sets up the rescue. So we could have a sort of small skirmish between the dwarves and the spiders, and the spiders, you know, fleeing reluctantly.
Take it out on Radagast.
What?
They take it out on Radagast.
No. They're mad at the dwarves later because they foil their attempt to free the hedgehog, and so they're still resentful from their failed attempt.
Yes.
So that's why they come back and attack the dwarves later on.
Maybe it's somebody in the Middle Earth chat room said, "Oh, it's Arwen. Arwen, I like the old man Willow theory."
Yeah, that's the first thing that made me think of was laugh up all you want. I'm telling you, I'm gonna be right. But I don't know. It's just Gravias always makes me think of nature, and I don't know. I just thought roots.
And you know, it's true. It does. Gravias is a friend of birds and beasts, but it doesn't say anything about plants.
Well, exactly. So, you know, he could really hate plants and love hedgehogs. We don't know, you know.
Corey, check out the URL I just sent you. Brianna sent that through on the question thing. It's a little bit of a moving movie where you can see a spider leg in the window. See the spider leg in the window?
But look at the bottom left and look how it kind of reaches up from the ground.
Well, see, the bottom left now, like what we see behind the stained glass window could be anything, right? I mean, that could be trees, that could be, and that that could be willow branches. We can't rule it out. Yeah, you can kind of see the body there. Yeah, the abdomen down here. Yeah. Well, yeah, the motion does help.
If you ignore the potential trouble with the narrative that having spiders attack Ross Goble introduces, it seems like spider is the most likely explanation, given that we know there will be spiders in the film, we know the spiders will be attacking things, we also know that some confused person made a quiz question on Facebook that asks about a spider attack on Ross Goble. It seems like all the evidence points toward a spider. It just seems troublesome in terms of narrative. Like, maybe there's a huge coordinated spider attempt to take over Mirkwood. Maybe they'll simultaneously attack Radagast, the dwarves. Maybe they'll attack the elves. Maybe the spiders will even rebel and attack.
Is this like the spider version of the final scene of The Godfather, basically? You know, so this is what you're suggesting.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So we're gonna have like the spiders trying to catch Azog in a revolving door. And okay. Yeah. Maybe. But I mean, really, that raises, you know, one of the big questions, which I think has been really openly invited by the way that they're bringing all of the other stories together, is that. Basically, to what extent are the spiders going to be taking orders? How independent are they in fact going to be? Are they going to be simply a peril that is met in Mirkwood? Are they attacking Ross Goble because they happen to live nearby and be evil and therefore are attacking, again, assuming that they don't have a hedgehog problem, that they're just, you know, because he's good and they're evil and so they're attacking? Or that they just are attacking victims that are lost in the forest, which is what we get in the book. That, you know, since the dwarves are making noise and running around helplessly in the dark, they're captured and eaten because that's what the spiders do. Are we going to get that? Or are we going to get them as actually being deployed by the necromancer? Because it is really, that is really plausible to imagine that Sauron, who is, you know, living there in Mirkwood, has influence over the evil creatures that live there. Now, of course, we have plenty of reason from within the Tolkien texts to think that the spiders are going to be independent. And I don't just mean based on what we see of them in The Hobbit. I mean, if we think of, you know, giant spider, of the relationships in all of Tolkien's works between the giant spiders and the bad guys, Sauron and Morgoth, they never take orders. You know, Shelob doesn't take orders from Sauron. She just lives there, and Sauron takes advantage of that fact. Ungoliant, of course, works with Morgoth, but is not exactly a good underling. And the descendants of Ungoliant, that is Shelob's brothers and sisters, who live in the Ered Gorgoroth, with that, you know, and that Beren meets famously on his way to Doriath. Again, they're not deployed by Morgoth or anything. So from within the book corpus, we have justification to imagine that the spiders are not in fact operating under the orders of the necromancer. But again, I would think that such a change could be justified by the way in which the films could reconceive the way that the evil creatures work together. So again, we've talked before in our Goblin episode, we talked about that, about like the political relationships between Dol Guldur and the goblins of the Misty Mountains. I think the same question applies to the spiders. And really, to me, that question is the big one and really influences how we look at this spider attack, either on Ross Goble or on the dwarves.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So I think we're definitely running short on time. So I want to kind of start wrapping things up. Although, I would like to invite whichever of our panelists are available to stick around after we finish the official broadcast to continue chatting if they're interested. I might try to pin some of you down to answer some outstanding riddles that you haven't answered yet. So don't stay on past the end of the official broadcast, and then if you need to go, we'll go ahead and say goodbye then. I'd like to just do some logistical stuff, but for those of you who are willing to stick around a little longer, maybe we'll continue chatting and recording. But we won't overlap too much with the live stream of that because they're about to start the One Ring Adventures on the Middle Earth stream. So, but please don't log off immediately, analysts, because I want to chat with you shortly. So, I actually we're not going to do a riddle, but I'm calling it. I'm making an executive decision. We are going to do an up down conundrum.
Okay.
And so I want to go down the list and ask everybody to give me a yes or no answer. And your question is going to be, will spiders attack Ross Goebel in the first film? So, will spiders attack? I'm not saying, and mind you, the question is not, is the thing in the image a spider? Maybe it's not. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. It's kind of looks like it is. It seems to be evidence that something, maybe spiders is attacking Ross Goebel. The question just in general is, will spiders attack Radagast at Ross Goebel? So, okay. In the first film.
I was going to say, I think even the more pressing question is that hedgehog going to survive this encounter, whatever is happening? As I said, that's what I really care about. I mean, you know, the house looks nice, but it's not what matters to me.
Yes. So, Arwen, will spiders attack Ross Goebel?
No.
All right.
Is that all you Emil, need?
yes, that's all I need. Emil, will spiders attack Ross Goebel?
I hope not.
Not good enough. Not good enough.
So, is that a no?
No, that's a yes, but I hope they will.
Oh, I see. So you think they will, but you'd rather they didn't.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, Hannah.
I'm gonna go with yes.
All right. Merrick.
No.
All right. Last Alliance folks, you can each give us an answer, but then we will synthesize them into one.
Okay. I think we're agreed, aren't we? We're not.
I think they're coming for acupressure.
They're coming for treatment.
I far prefer that interpretation to what Radagast is doing with the hedgehog. I prefer to think that it's a purely elective procedure and entirely benign in its intentions. So yes.
Oh my goodness. I think we'll have to. It's pretty undeniable that that's a spider in the trailer. So we're gonna say yes, but again, very reluctantly. We don't want to see this happen. It's gonna interrupt the narrative.
Hello.
Okay,
okay,
Mitch is actually okay with it, so scratch that.
We're divided.
We're divided. Divided we fall.
All right. All right.
But it's yes. Yes.
Sean, I think I know what your answer is going to be.
My answer is yes, and to answer Corey's question, the hedgehog will die because Radagast will send it out to fight on his behalf.
Well, and then he will escape while the spiders are devouring the hedgehog?
Yeah. Wow.
Okay.
Trish.
I am also reluctantly saying yes.
Okay. I likewise reluctantly will say yes. Corey.
I will say yes, but I actually am not all that reluctant about it. I think that could be fine. Here's my potential solution. Now, I don't know that this is anything like. I don't think this is anything like necessarily what they will do. But anyway, here's what I would do. I don't think we necessarily have a spider battle here. I think that this can just basically be used as a kind of setup, whether or not the dwarves come in. But I think even if they don't, we could get them attacking. We don't even need to get much more than this. We could get Radagast looking up at his roof as spiders come in, and then we cut somewhere else, and then meet Radagast later and hear the story of how he escaped or something, or just to say, you know, he comes in and says, yeah, spiders just took out my house. So that doesn't necessarily need to detract from the dwarf and spider thing later on. I could imagine ways in which it could be used as a setup or anticipation for what's going to happen later, and therefore not wreck the narrative as far as the film is concerned. But yeah, I do think it's likelier to be spiders than willow trees. So I'm going to go with yes, and the hedgehog will survive.
And Dave Ben, our gridmaster, points out that we should put for Mark Fisher a no. Since that's the book answer.
Not in the book. Won't happen. Wow, somebody was filling out the grid in real time while we were answering that. Okay, well, we need to get off the air because they're about to broadcast the One Ring Adventures. But I want to go ahead and...
Oh, I do want... Dave, don't forget to let people know.
Oh,
if,
yes.
Listeners, Facebook if you page. Want to vote on these riddles and conundra that we've been on this on these episodes, go to the Riddles in the Dark Predictions Facebook page and join in the game.
That's right.
That's right. We will give you all the details. We're gonna do our usual thing of adding some extra recorded material to the end of this. So we'll give you all the details there about where that Facebook page is, URL, all that kind of stuff. We will also give you all the details on our analysts, their web pages, Twitter accounts, Facebook pages, all that kind of stuff where you can find them. Because we got to rush off the air, so I just want to tell all of our analysts, thank you very much for joining us. It was a lot of fun. It wasn't nearly as chaotic as it might have been, which is wonderful and also very sad at the same time, in my opinion. But thank you. We will definitely be doing it again. Especially you should definitely slot some time in your schedule for a panel get together after the film comes out, so we can go through and argue about which answers were the right ones. And also we would love to, we're going to make a concerted effort over, not in the next 2 months necessarily, but definitely in the next, over the next year, since we're going to keep doing this as long as there's films to see, we're going to make a real concerted effort to start having you guys on to the main Riddles in the Dark shows too. So
yeah.
Thank you very much, analysts. Yep.
Yes, thanks for joining us, and thanks for everybody who's been watching through HobbitDay.com. We continue with the Hobbit Day celebrities. Well, there were our celebrities. I meant festivities, but celebrities too. Anyway, so continue with the celebration. Thanks very much, everybody. Okay. Are we still on? Yeah, we're still on. Look at that. Okay, I think we're just...
Okay, I think we're off.
Yep, they just took us off now, I think.
All right, good. So, okay, so question one. Corey, what's your schedule this afternoon?
Busy. I'm doing a Skype Q&A session with people at a bookstore in North Carolina in half an hour, and then
okay.
From 3 to 3:30, and then I'm doing a Mythgard Q&A, which we're going to broadcast on HobbitDay.com too, that is just sort of like a general Hobbit Q&A that we'll do again through this interface.
Did you make me an organizer of this?
Yes, you are.
Okay, good. So basically, if you run off, we can keep going.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I will have to run in like 10 minutes, but I can keep going for a little bit.
Okay. All right, good. And for our analysts, who are people able to maybe stick around for a little while?
I actually need to run. This is Hannah.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Let me ask that question differently. Who needs to jet?
I do.
I probably need to go, but I know I owe you some recordings.
I just need to run through. For a little bit. We have a huge marathon happening right now in honor of Hobbit Day. So in another room, 50 of our members are watching the Trilogy Extended Edition. So we can stick around for a while, but at some point we're going to have to replenish their popcorn supply. and pick up a birthday cake, which is happening.
Ah. Okay.
Excellent.
So we're gonna lose Corey in 10 minutes. We're gonna lose Hannah. We're gonna lose Dodge. We're gonna lose the Last Alliance folks. Everybody else, I don't really have anywhere to be, so I can stick around as long as people would like to keep chatting.
I've got until 3 o'clock, and then my kids wake up from nap.
Ah, so that is in half an hour.
Yep.
Cool. All right. So awesome. We're going to be even more informal with this. Actually, first, Corey, is there any kind of logistical stuff we'd like to cover?
I don't think so. Pretty soon we're going to need to map out very carefully the episodes that we're still going to do between now and the end so we can kind of forewarn people what to be thinking about, because, of course, we're going to want to have you, if you want to register stuff before the film, we're going to have that in so we can give you more advanced warnings so you can be thinking in advance about some of these things. So logistically speaking, that's one thing that is going to change, is we will... we may have to interrupt our schedule for, you know, emergency episodes for new trailers and that kind of thing. But by and large, I think there are some things we can stick to.
Yep, yep. And I will send out an email this afternoon to everybody, kind of just reminding you of which questions you still haven't answered and pointing you to where you can go and listen if you want to listen and all that kind of stuff. And I would encourage folks to try to get their missing predictions in sort of as quickly as you can. Don't scruple over it too long, and Dodge, if you want to just sort of if you and Jamie want to just catch up on the predictions and not record too much audio, no worries about that. But if you want to record audio, we love having the recorded audio. And then we'll get people caught up. We'll get people on board. We have a couple of our new folks, Emil and Sean, that we need to get a ton of predictions from. So I'm going to harass you guys especially. Oh, did he? Sweet. Well done. All right, Emil, you're the delinquent then. Like Corey said, I think what we're going to try to do is come up with a schedule for our questions, so we can send it out ahead of time so you guys can start thinking about them. So that way, because what we want to do is we want to have everybody's predictions registered by the time the film comes out. And that way, our goal is to have people take, we have somebody working on potentially like a printable pamphlet of the questions and predictions, so that people can take them to the film with them and ruin their film-going experience by obsessing over whether they got predictions right rather than enjoying the movie.
Yes, we are going to have a score sheet that people can take with them and not only ruin their own movie experience, but also annoy everyone around them by, like, illuminating their sheet with their, you know, their phones and stuff in the theater. It's going to be awesome. We're going to have people kicked out of theaters across the world thanks to us. So it's going to be great.
Yeah. That's our plan. So we'll follow up with all the details on that stuff very soon, and we'll just keep you posted. So just keep your eyes peeled to your emails. So one thing we thought would be kind of fun to do, and I want to do this really quick before people have to leave, is and this was Trish's idea. And this doesn't exactly apply to everybody who, like, for those of you who haven't answered a lot of questions, this doesn't help you as much. But Trish's idea was, suppose we were to give you one riddle that you could go back and change your answer to, which one would it be? And then I think, actually, are we actually going to let people change their answers, Trish?
One question. We're going to give them amnesty on one question. So this is an opportunity to improve your score. Yeah, and as Sharon says, I think we should make the movie break question not. I mean, that should be a gimme for everybody.
Yeah, it's
that's the additional movie. Actually, that's the additional movie one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Riddle 13 was: is there going to be a third movie?
Yeah, and I guess it could be a conundrum too. One riddle or conundrum that you get to go back and change your answer. You know, the idea being that there's something that you've learned from the trailers or various So anyway, and so what we'd like on the air now, you don't have to decide right this moment, because I know there's a flood of riddles and you probably would like to go and study them to decide which one you got wrong and should change. But just if you, we'd like to hear from each of our panelists, and we'll start with the people that have to leave. So Hannah, you can go first. Is there any one question that you're like, boy, this one was really tough. I think I probably got this one wrong. I would probably change that one. But you can, you're allowed to study and decide differently, you know, in a couple days or whatever. So, any one riddle that was really particularly problematic for you, Hannah?
I can't remember what it was. I remember on one of them just being like, I have no idea, and I was kind of just throwing a dart. So I just don't remember what it is, but if I go back and look at them, I will remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I definitely have one.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes, good enough. Merrick, Dave, how about you, sir?
I'm going to run, so I'm...
Oh, Corey, did you have one riddle that you wanted to do really fast?
Oh, do I get one too?
Yeah, you get one too.
Oh, I was assuming I would be frozen. Well, no, I remain sublimely confident about my every prediction. And I also, well, I will follow that by saying I firmly expect to finish in the bottom half of our predictor pool.
But now I know Father Roderick's going to win.
Well, man, he's tough. Of course, when you answer none of the above for every one, you know, it's pretty funny. Anyway, thanks to everybody. Thanks to all the listeners who have joined us. It's been fun. If you can, come back at 4 o'clock. We're just going to do an open sort of discussion of The Hobbit. You know, people want to have questions, things they want to discuss about The Hobbit, questions they have about my book or anything like that. We'll just do a general Q&A, sort of, you know, discussing and sharing Hobbit stuff at 4. So I will be back for that, and on the air again in 20 minutes in North Carolina. So see you guys. You guys can keep going. Bye.
Thanks, Corey. See you, buddy.
Bye.
All right.
Dave, I'm going to say goodbye, too. Thanks for having me. This was really great and fun.
Yeah, thank you for making the time to join us. I know you're taking a little time off, so we would love to have you on an actual episode of Riddles in the Dark soon. So.
Okay, I think you could probably talk me into it.
Good. And to remind the listeners, so you have, let me pull it up really fast. Where is my information? People can find you on the web at, your Tumblr is hmhlit.tumblr.com.
My literature and translation blog, so don't feel like you definitely want to check that out. But.
And your Twitter account is hhharlow.
Yes. And I encourage you guys.
You're always posting awesome literature stuff.
I'm in charge of the website readthehobbit.com, so you can check it out.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Let's add that one on there, too.
Any comments and suggestions are welcome.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Hannah.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Yep. Bye.
Right.
Merrick, I know you have to go. Do you have a particular riddle that you found? You or Jamie have riddles that you guys found really, really problematic?
I don't think so. No, I think they're all pretty good. I mean, they all seem to have very good choices.
All right, you're confident, like Corey.
Pretty confident, yeah.
Okay, cool. People can find you guys on the web at casualstrolltomordor.com. Your Twitter account is @strolltomordor. You have a Facebook page. You have the Stroll to Mordor YouTube channel, the Casual Stroll to Mordor Flickr account. And then, of course, your podcast is live on Saturday nights at 9:30 Eastern time still. Is that true?
No, that is correct.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you to you and Golden Star for doing the prediction game with us, and we look forward to having you guys on the show sometime down the road.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, man. See ya. Anybody else need to jet shortly?
I do.
One of us does. One of our group.
Yeah.
We're the last line talking. So we would like to change actually a riddle if that's okay.
Oh, really? Wow, yes. You guys have one in mind already.
Yes. Okay. So the one about Gollum being sympathetic. Gollum's portrayal.
Uh-huh.
We said he would not be... If I remember correctly, we said that he would be meaner. But based on the trailer that we just saw, he looks pretty cute and cuddly. So we revoke that answer and change it to the more sympathetic.
We recant.
Answer.
Yes. Fact. You know, there's a lot of people that answered C on that question. There may be a lot of people that might want to change their answer. Yep. All right, so Last Alliance, you're changing to B. He will be more sympathetic, or B, he's pretty much the same?
The same.
Probably A.
No, A. He looks way more cuddly.
Yeah. Okay, so you think he's more sympathetic.
Yeah.
All right. Good work. Arwen, I know you have to run in about 15 minutes, so maybe I'll let you go next. Is there any particular riddle that you thought was hard and that you might have gotten wrong and that you might go back and change? You don't have to decide finally right now.
I'm trying to get... this whole time I've been trying to get my netbook to just load the document. and it's just giving me the what for. I'm like, I can't get it to work. I'm trying to remember... I'm looking through the questions right now. As far as I know, there are none that I want to change.
Okay.
I know some of them are pretty extreme, just because I felt like, oh, everyone did that, I'm going to do this.
I believe up to the point where both of you have answered the same set of questions, I believe, Arwen, that you are actually now officially the book answer person. Let me count.
The book answer person? Me?
Yeah, A. We almost always pick A as the, A is almost always the sort of true to the book answer, and I believe you have now picked more of those than anybody else.
Really? That's shocking. That's funny. I'm usually like, go PJ type of person, but I don't know.
Actually, no, you know what? I miscounted. Mark Fisher's still ahead of you.
Okay.
But you're a close second. And you have some predictions still to make, so it could well be that you'll end up catching up to him.
This is true. I know I have some more. I'm looking right now at the thing. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed it so far.
Good. I'm glad. Next, let's see. Well, Emil, you haven't answered any officially yet, so you don't need to change any. You essentially get the benefit of hindsight for all of them.
Well, I kind of looked at the questions, and I can say
Hard.
Well, I mean, I can say that I thought there would be a curse in The Hobbit, but obviously there isn't. So. I will have to skip
You were in the pro-purse camp, huh?
Oh, yes.
But they don't have any pockets.
No, they'll be carrying...
A purse! A talking purse would have just been ridiculous. This isn't the sorting hat from Harry Potter. This is the Hobbit.
So you were strong. You were in the pro-purse camp, Emil. Nice.
Oh, yes, definitely. And Sean can laugh as much as he wants. I'm still pro purse.
Oh, yeah. Dearie me.
Did I say yes on that one?
Let's see. Will there be which conundrum is?
Because we had a great debate about that on Warriors.
Yes. Two. Arwen, you said no. The only
I think
yeses.
Because we're
The only yeses to that were Mark Fisher and Golden Star. Well, he didn't answer yes either.
No, but I changed my answer.
He was hoping. He's still hoping. I'm doing that too. There's a variety of things where I'm putting down the strategic I want to win the game answer, but I'm secretly hoping the film will turn out differently. This is I've decided this is a strategic way to distract myself from fixating on changes that I don't like. You know, like I know I know my fiance is dreading watching this movie with me because she thinks I'm going to sit and complain about, well, that's not how it is in the book, that's not how it is in the book. But little does she know when I'm going to be sitting there and going, and I'm going to be sitting there and saying, "Ah, crap! That looks like a B and I put A."
One of our commenters who comments a lot, Brent Sprinkle, who comments a lot on the Mythgard site, made an observation yesterday or the day before that he's gotten to the point with the game now where he cares more about getting more as many answers right as possible than what actually is going to happen in the movie.
So, Sean, are there any? Is there a particular riddle that you found hard or that you might consider changing?
No.
All right. A lot of really good people. I think I suspect I'm going to encourage everyone to take a second look at their answers, because there's a few where I'm looking, I'm thinking, I'm starting to wonder about my answer about Thorin and how he'll end up in the Elven King's dungeon. I'm starting to think maybe I should change that one.
You only get one, Dave. You only get one. And Ben, who is our grid master, you know, Ben, I'm assuming you're still on, and you need to just double check to make sure Dave's answers haven't changed a whole lot.
Let me take a screenshot so you can double check. Yeah, I better start changing them right now. So one thing I would be interested to hear everybody's thoughts on, and we don't really necessarily have to do the one at a time panel thing anymore, is whether people think what people originally thought the ending was before the films were split and before the artwork on the Hobbit app was changed and before the most recent trailer. Where did people think the film was going to end, and do they think it's likely that they think it's going to be changed? That in particular, the sort of, you know, to illustrate this, I think most everyone agreed it was going to end somewhere around the Barrel Ride, probably along the banks of Lake Town. And when they changed when they released the Hobbit app and that artwork scroll was changed, removing some of the rightmost scenes, including the barrels, the OneRing.net came out and said, well, they've spoiled it. The film's going to end at the Eagle's rescue of the company from the burning trees. And they sort of definitively said, we think that's where the ending's going to be. In fact, they didn't even say it. They didn't even temper it that much. They said, that is the ending. And I disagree. I'm not convinced they're going to move it yet. But I'm kind of curious to hear from this crowd. Do people think that where did they think the ending was originally going to be, and do they think it's going to be moved now?
Okay,
and
we'll
if it is
in.
Moved, how disastrous would that be?
Sorry. We will jump
Go
in with an answer. And then we actually just got a text that they are out of food, so we're going to have to jet and replenish our club.
All right. Well, give us your thoughts. Give us your thoughts, and then we'll say goodbye to you.
I'm not – well, I guess we can each go separately. Personally, I don't think that – I agree with you, Dave. I don't think necessarily that it has to change from the Barrel Ride, because now there's so much extra material that they're drawing from now that they could still have the main narrative sort of end there and be able to fill the next two movies with backstories and other battles, et cetera, et cetera. So I do not think that it will end when they are rescued by the Eagles. I don't think so.
I think, well, I did think Barrel Rise before, but now I'm thinking more about the spider battle.
Oh, the spider battle.
So I don't think they'll even get kidnapped by the elves in the first movie.
Yeah, my sense is that they're going to save Mirkwood for the second movie.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Because
so you think they'll end it like the Eagle rescue, maybe?
Yeah, or Bjorn.
Yeah,
I guess that could make sense, because you do get the spider leg in Radagast's roof, so you could still have a hint of that sort of in the first film without.
Maybe that'll be the last scene, an ominous spider leg punching a hole in Radagast's roof.
Or sending him off on his ponies into the woods or whatever. That's the last
Do you have any concerns but our major concern with that is that that would make for extremely packed second and third films.
Well, I have major concerns with them splitting it in three. I mean, there's no way they can do it that I don't have major concerns, I guess.
Rick is a bit cynical. I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, in fairness, there's really no way they could make these films where there isn't going to be a significant portion of us who don't have major concerns.
Yeah, so
we're just concerned about this whole endeavor in general.
But yeah, that will they will have to pack quite a bit in the final too. But I wonder how much is going to be set up in the first one. Like how much of the backstory is going to end up actually in the first one.
Like Battle of Azanulbazar.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, the only question is whether where Dol Guldur is going to be. Is that going to be in the first or the second?
That's one of my big worries.
Well, yeah, I mean when they drive out the necromancer. That part of the
movie. No, that'll be third movie, I think.
You think?
Yeah. Okay. Or second. That might be the second. Yeah. That's a good point. Because then Battle of Five Armies will be the main in the third movie. That's a that's a good point. That's probably what.
Well, because the thing to keep in mind is, the thing to keep in mind is that they can't actually do it until, Gandalf doesn't leave until they get the edge of Mirkwood,
right.
And then by the time that they're on the mountain, Gandalf is on his way. He's already done with that business. So there's a really tight window in which the Battle of Dol Guldur is supposed to fit. Now maybe some of the other Gandalf 007 spy type stuff could happen earlier, but.
Well, you could,
yeah,
you
that's my my big worry is that there really doesn't seem any place where that stuff can go other than the second film, and I worry that if they push off Mirkwood till then.
Yeah, I can see them splitting each film into two major, right? So the first film you have the goblins and the wargs. The second film you have the spiders and the driving out the necromancer, and then the third film you have Smaug and Bard and the Battle of Five Armies. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. sort of six major. Kind of events, I guess.
But. And that would actually be a reason for them to expand it into three movies. Maybe they were just thinking there's such a tight window for this Dol Guldur stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's just make that the thrust of the second movie. Make a whole.
I mean, those things happen simultaneously, right? The spiders end up driving over the mechanism. Right?
It can happen.
In the book. Chronologically.
Gandalf is off.
Yeah, while they're in the woods, you know, well, Mirkwood, that's a bit of an understatement to call it the woods, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
Anyway, we also have answers for all our other riddles. We had a question box at the marathon, and people have been filling them out. So I will send you an email tonight with all of our answers up to date.
Yay! Thanks.
Sorry, we've been tardy.
It's okay, and we enjoyed the audio content you contributed the one time. So anything like that you ever want to send, if you want to record something at your marathon or whatever, send it along, and we'll be happy to include it.
Sure, that would be awesome. Hey, and if you ever want to invite us to one of the sessions, we would love that. We had the best time today, so thank you so much for including us.
We will definitely be doing that. One other thing, just to toss this out there, is I don't know how far along we are in arranging this, Trish, but we're working on trying to make an event where we essentially fly out to the East Coast and watch The Hobbit with Corey. So.
Yeah. We'll let you guys know because Corey has announced it, you know, and he announced it a couple different places. He also announced it at the Mythgar class, so it is definitely going to happen. It's just, you know, trying to figure because he wants to figure out other stuff too, like panel talks. I've said that, you know, right after the movie, we're going to have to probably convene some kind of a council to decide what the right answers are for all the riddles. You know, definitely party time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'll do it.
Oh, that would be
fantastic. DC's my old stomping grounds. It's where I grew up, so that would be so cool.
Yeah, we're definitely in for that. I can't guarantee that all 60 members will come, but because that's final exams. But I mean,
yes,
I'm
going to be.
Come.
I have final exams as well, so I'm kind of sweating it. But I'm like, no, I have to go.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, and I
have a keep your eyes open. Details about that will come from Trish soon. So, all right. Well, we'll let you guys go tend to your event. And your website is lastallianceuofa.com. You have a Twitter account, lastallianceua. You also have a podcast that's available on iTunes now, right?
Right. The Last Alliance podcast. This is all you have to search.
Cool. Great. Well, Megan, Mitch, and Rick, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us, Dave. Looking forward to next time.
Yes, us too, us too. Bye.
Yeah.
So we've still got Arwen, we've still got Emil, and we still have Sean, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I have to actually head out because it's my kids are waking up. So.
Yep. Do you want to go on the record for thoughts about moving the ending?
The ending? Sure, I'll go on the record. Yeah, I think it was a little too soon for the One Ring to come out and say, well, that's it. This is going to be the exact ending. While I do agree that the barrels might not be in the first film, I wouldn't say that the werewolves in the fire and all that would be the last of the first film. I kind of agree. I don't know who said it. Someone mentioned Bjorn's house, mm-hmm. and I kind of think that would be like a good kind of resting place, like a, okay, we've reached this, now what's the next part kind of thing, and then Mirkwood and Laketown are going to be the second film, and then the third film is going to be, I think, all about the Army of the Five, or blah, 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 Battle of the Five Armies. So those are my thoughts.
Cool.
There you go.
Thank you. And so,
and Roots, by the way, they're Roots.
You think it's Roots attacking the house?
Roots are attacking the house. I stand by this.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. That's right. That's right. But anyways, so, thanks guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming. And you're here representing both Middle Earth News and the Warriors of the Westfold podcast. So Middle Earth News is news.mymiddleearth.com. You have a Twitter account, Middle Earth News. Warriors of the Westfold, the Twitter account is Westfold Warriors, and you guys are every Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Every Friday night at 9 p.m. EST. Mm-hmm. And we have our own website now, warriorsofthewestfold.com.
Oh, good. Great.
Very simple and very excited
about that. I will make sure we include that in our show notes. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming, Arwen, and happy Hobbit Day to you.
Thanks, Dave. You guys have a good Hobbit Day.
You too. So, Emil and Sean, what any thoughts you guys care to offer about this possibility of the ending being moved?
Can I go first? Because I've got to dash off to various Octomoot things. Somebody was talking about how if the ending was moved to, say, out of the frying pan into the fire, that would make the last two films a lot bigger, a lot heavier, more stuff. And I quickly picked up my copy of The Hobbit, and I genuinely flipped to the midpoint, and it fell to Barrels Out of Bond. So if there's two films, that's where it should end according to the length of the book. And splitting it into three pretty much finishes the first film at Out of the Frying Pan into the Fire, and would finish the second film at On the Doorstep. So, I mean, if they're kind of going by the number of pages in the book, that is pretty much where they're going. And that's actually pretty much what I thought was going to happen. They were going to finish it at the Barrels. And it also is pretty much what I think they're going to do. I think they aren't going to finish at Bjorn's house. I think they're going to finish at Ross Goebel. And then I think the second film is going to finish at, here we are, we're at the mountain, what the hell do we do next? And then...
That is my main latent worry about them pushing the ending is just that there's this parallel storyline that they seem quite invested in telling a lot of, including a major battle. And my worry is that it doesn't split evenly into thirds the way that the book does. Like if you split it like that, then almost all of that Dol Guldur storyline ends up in the second film. So and I also we generally sort of feel like my feeling all along, looking at the Harry Potter films, was that their strategy was to actually split, when they split the film into two, to actually put two-thirds of the book into the first film, because they wanted to have a good 45-minute-long battle of the final confrontation. And I kind of expect them to do that here as well, and so I wonder, if they really want to have a nice cinematic huge Battle of Five Armies conclusive battle, if they're also killing Smog, if they're also first encountering Smog, seeing Smog attack Laketown, then Smaug gets killed, then you do all that stuff, then you have Battle of Five Armies. That's a pretty packed second film. And also kind of, it sort of, like, it doesn't, Smaug doesn't get much screen time, but then he doesn't get that much time in the book, so maybe. I'm not completely pessimistic. I just have questions about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I sort of agree. The problem is, where do you cut? I mean, it's not the first and the second film is quite easy. There's sort of several points you could go for, and I don't think that's too much of a challenge. But I think, where do you cut between the second and the third film to actually not make the third film a worthless film by itself?
That's true.
Each film has still, even though they're part of a trilogy, each film has got to be, well, I wouldn't say quite self-contained, but they've got to tell their own individual story, like in The Lord of the Rings. The first film was about the Fellowship, and it ended with the conclusion of the Fellowship breaking up. The second film ended with the conclusion that Frodo and Sam are going into Mordor, and the third film finished with the conclusion of Aragorn becoming king. There's got to be some kind of conclusion for the second film to make it, and then for the third film to still be its own proper story. That's the problem is, if you don't finish the second film on the doorstep, there is no point later on in the story where you think you've got an easy break here. I mean, you could argue that the next easy break, I would say, would be Smaug dying, at which point you're left with the third film that it's pretty much one battle and then going home again. And right. I'm not sure if that's a film.
That's a good point. It is, because the Battle of Five Armies, if you're a person watching the film without having read the book or reading the book for the first time, the Battle of Five Armies is a surprise. Like, you don't expect that. So after Smaug is killed, you kind of think, well, we're done. You know, like, that was the major threat that everyone's been worrying about and talking about, Smaug, and now he's dead, so we're done, right? And you're kind of like, wait, what are all these extra chapters? I did wonder kind of if they killed Smaug at the end of the second film and there was an entire third film, if people wouldn't just not, would like not come, not realize that there's actually a whole nother movie, there's more stuff to happen, and that they would just skip out because they're like, well, it's done, they killed Smaug. So that's a good point.
I mean, but actually what you've raised made me think of one very interesting thing, is that the whole premise of The Hobbit, so originally two films, now trilogy, the whole of it, not a single thing, have they mentioned a dragon. We've had nothing at all that this story is about a dragon. We've read a lot about, this is a story about dwarves going to reclaim some treasure, dwarves and a hobbit going on an adventure. Mm-hmm. But nothing at all mentioning a dragon. I think we're going to be surprised at how late the dragon properly appears in the story. I think I'm going to be, in a sense, disappointed how fleeting it ends up being.
Interesting.
Anyway, I've got to shoot off now.
Yes, sir. So, just briefly, when I'm interacting with Tolkien Gateway on Twitter, is that you?
No, that's Daniel Helen. Although I, as you rightly point out, I do also run Tolkien Gateway. I have a young friend who does the Twitter account for me, but
But you have your own Twitter account well, Sean Gunner.
Yes, I am at Sean Gunner.
G-U-N-N-E-R.
Yep, and the Tolkien Society is at Tolkien Society, and Tolkien Gateway is at Tolkien Gateway, and you can get to the Tolkien Gateway at www.tolkiengateway.net. You can get to the Tolkien Society at www.tolkiensociety.org, and you can find us all on Facebook.
Yep. Thank you. Perfect. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Thank you for having me, and make sure you protect those bunnies.
We will. That's our primary concern.
Right, bye-bye.
All right, let's do it again, man. Happy Hobbit Day. All right, Emil, thoughts on the possibility of the ending being shifted around or where the splits would be? Emil. Where is the stress?
Well, it's...
Is it second syllable or first?
I can say it in Swedish. And you can just try to say it after that. So in Swedish, it's Emil.
Emil.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's better to put a French pronunciation, I think. Emil. Yes, exactly. I just need to say, and I'm very sorry, but I will have to go in a few.
That's fine, man.
5 to 10 minutes, something like that.
Sure. You can give us some parting thoughts.
Yes. I think probably the first movie will end. The climax of the movie, the climactic battle, will be the wolves or the wargs, or whatever you choose to call them. And then there will be probably 20 minutes after that when they're on their way to Beorn and interacting with the eagles. And then when they've reached Beorn, things will kind of have slowed down to the point of where they can end that movie. And to fill the first movie also, I think they will probably have a lot of backstory. And someone mentioned that they could be having a lot of backstory before even introducing Bilbo. And I think that's quite likely, actually.
That's actually one thing. Did you guys notice that in the trailer, the most recent trailer, we see some early shots of Bilbo kind of leading up to the unexpected party, and initially we see him when he first welcomes Keeley and Feely, he's like wearing his daytime dress, and then in the next scene when you see him with the dwarves headbutting each other, he's actually wearing his smoking jacket, whatever robe thing. So the question that rose for me was how long is that unexpected party scene going to be? It could be that will be a good, like on your point of doing sort of background and story for Bilbo, maybe that unexpected party scene is going to be a good 20, 30 minutes.
Well, perhaps, I mean.
Yeah, or I just consider all of that stuff setting the stage. Like if you think, if you guys, Emil, did you watch the old Rankin-Bass cartoon?
I did, but that was a while ago, so, and I don't remember the details of it.
Yeah.
Anything
if you guys, yeah, if you guys watch that again, you'll know you'll see that whole the unexpected party scene takes like 2 minutes, literally. Like it's starts with them singing, and Gandalf is there, and he introduces all the dwarves to Bilbo, and then scene transition into them eating dinner, and then they transition to them cleaning up, and next thing you know, they're on the road. And it's very fast, and it's kind of, if you want to get into the action quickly, that's the way you would do it, but if you want to set the stage, maybe they'll do it not that fast. Maybe they'll have 20 to 30 minutes of Bilbo and Gandalf doing their morning greetings and things like that. What do you think, Emil?
Yeah, probably, and I think also having a scene where Bilbo goes off on himself after receiving the first few dwarfs, I think they will have a scene where he goes off to change and to bring some food, and it will be an intimate scene where he kind of questions what he's doing and what's really happening here. So I think that's very likely, and also some kind of tie-in with Gandalf and where he's gotten the map from and the key and that kind of things. It's very likely, I think.
That's an interesting point, because the scene where the two dwarves are headbutting each other looks like a greeting, yeah. So it seems like those guys just showed up. I don't know what they're doing with the editing. Before you go, Emil, I wanted to know if there was anything you'd like to tell us about. Like, I would love to do an extended episode where we have you on with Corey, and we just talk to you about your project and just sort of get kind of your experiences and back. Like, I would really love to do that. So we'll have to talk about when would be a good time to do that in the near future. I was wondering if you wanted to tell us. Give us like a quick rundown about it in the remaining time that you have.
About the project.
Yeah, and kind of like how in the world did you end up doing this? You know, you're a graduate student in chemical engineering. How did you end up deciding to do this? And is there any chance you'll actually finish your graduate degree if you spend all of your time doing this?
Oh, only time will tell. But I never. Well, there is a fast version, and I mean, I kind of started this a while back, many years ago, probably eight years ago, and it began with the forging of the. It began with me reading the books, and I had actually read them just before the movies came out, so I kind of created my own vision of Middle-earth. And then I went on to read Silmarillion, and as I read it, that book, which is kind of dry, as you are aware, and I was kind of just doodling on a piece of paper and started sketching out the various relationships in the book, because it's such a vast world, it's very difficult to get a grasp of everything. And so that kind of just developed into 2 1-by-1-meter papers, huge papers with relationships. And then I knew I wanted to share it, but I didn't know how, so I kind of put that project to rest and went on to do other things, probably to my parents' delight. But then when I started studying chemistry, well, as a student, you will want to have something to put your thoughts away from studies, and this kind of became my project to do in my spare time. And well, I mean, there was one person who convinced me that the project was doable, and I didn't know much about programming, so that part I've had to learn pretty much from scratch. But then it just kind of happened. The project just kind of happened. That's the truth.
just with a crap load of work.
Oh yes. Well, I mean, but I like to think that's the spirit of the project, that things just happen. And I mean, I didn't know, and I did certainly not expect any of the feedback to be this huge, and that also kind of just happened. And so it's been a very interesting year, and it will probably continue to be interesting as well.
Yeah, we're I'm fascinated by it, because it's a really great sort of combination of Middle Earth Tolkien type stuff, and then also a particular angle on it, genealogy, which is really fun, and you're doing a lot of fun sort of statistical analysis stuff, and then also the programming is really good. I mean, the UI and the user interaction is fantastic. So it's multidimensional in terms of being just a fantastic project. So we talk about it a lot. We're very excited about it, and I love interacting with you on Twitter. So I would love to get. You know, Corey's so busy, I don't know how much time he's really had to dive into it, but I would love to get the two of you on a podcast one of these days to just sit and chat about the genealogy, because I know he'll have, I know he's very interested and will have a lot of interesting comments to make, and maybe there's a possibility of collaborating somehow, so.
Yes, I was that's something thinking that. To
chat about.
Collaborative work is kind of where I'm moving. Towards.
Yep.
It's a bit difficult in terms of facilitating collaborative work, but I'm trying to come up with certain ideas, and I can certainly just send you a kind of mashup of the ideas I have currently, and we can just see what turns out.
Cool.
But I will have to get going now. It was really nice being part of the panel and the discussion. And
yeah, we were glad to have you.
And I'll try my best to catch up with the riddles. These past few months really has been quite busy, and I haven't really had the time to but I'm starting to catch up, and I'll probably do it tonight.
All right. Well, make sure you don't do it. Make sure you don't neglect your graduate studies.
Oh, I won't. I probably won't.
I feel your pain, man. I'm now in the same situation.
Oh, really? Well. Yeah.
All
right. I'll talk to you.
To review, your website is lotrproject.com, and that's where all the fun stuff is. The Hobbit Day stuff is lotrproject.com/thehobbit, and you're pretty active on Twitter, lotrproject. You're on there all the time, so you're definitely one of the more client-oriented Twitter posters. So I encourage our listeners to follow you and talk to you.
Sounds good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep. We'll be in touch soon. We definitely want to have you on another episode and to do an interview where we talk about your project. Yeah. All right?
Yeah. Sure. Sounds good.
All right, man. Well,
thank
happy
you.
Hobbit.
Bye-bye. Happy Hobbit Day to you, too.
All right. Well, I guess it's time to wrap this thing up.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. Shall I wrap it up with the usual?
Yes. Take it away, Trish.
Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.